How's it going, Reef Keepers? Welcome back to the We the Reefers podcast. I am finally going to launch into the long-awaited planning episode, which, to be honest with you, was a ton of work. I had to make up a whole bunch of notes for it. I've got some details from one of my core subscribers about the build process that he's going through and what kind of planning steps he's taken to tell you about and show you. It was a ton of work, so hopefully, you know, the work bears out, and this is a pretty good episode. But before I get into it, I want to mention, despite how difficult it was, I did finally persevere and push through, and after like an hour and a half phone call with Apple, and then like another hour of, you know, calling them back and figuring out why things hadn't happened, et cetera, I'm on Apple Podcasts now. So you can go ahead and check out We the Reefers on Apple Podcasts and so many, like, you know, smaller podcast apps and such draw from Apple Podcasts that now you should be able to get it just about anywhere that you prefer. I will say Google Podcasts, you will not be able to get it on. You'll have to find it on YouTube Music because, and this is a bad habit of Google that I've noticed over the years, they're shuttering Google Podcasts completely. So they're shutting down Google Podcasts and porting everything over to YouTube Music. So Google people, I'm sorry. It just seems to be the nature of the beast in the current era. So you can find it there. And I also want to ask you guys, you know, just as kind of a favor to me and kind of the cause that I push, which is not having any kind of outside money or influence acting upon any of the content that I produce, I kind of want to ask you guys to put the call out to listen to this podcast, because it's interesting. When I started the podcast, I pretty much immediately saw a precipitous drop in the amount of views that I get on my YouTube videos. And that's how I started. That was my bread and butter, was YouTube. And now I think it's an identity thing. I think I'm kind of like between being a YouTube guy or a podcast guy. And I think quite a few of you who really followed my YouTube channel closely were really happy to get this longer form content. And so I think that, you know, kind of naturally you guys are like, okay, I'm waiting for the podcast every week or every other week whenever he drops it. And that's kind of taken up focus. And that means that, like, the YouTube channel's kind of been put on the back burner for a lot of people that followed my content. So I'm not like asking you to go watch my YouTube videos that you don't want to watch or whatever. Like, if you're more interested in the podcast, that's actually really cool. And this does actually feel like, you know, kind of a final form evolution in my path to what I, you know, wanted to really do with my content. I'm still going to make YouTube videos, of course. I really enjoy doing that too. However, if I'm going to be a primarily, you know, the big thing that I do is this podcast, spread the word for me, right? Especially to reef keepers who, you know, are just not, you know, swept up in whatever big brand or, you know, whatever the latest, what, you know, chic trend is, or, you know, reef keepers who are like thoughtful people who really want to have an honest conversation about the hobby and about all the various aspects that interact with the hobby in our broader society. People like that, that, you know, would enjoy this content, please share it with them. Seriously. You know, I would really appreciate it. So, all right. Let's get into it. So, reef tank planning. Before I get into this, I'm going to tell you also, again, and I am very transparent about this kind of thing, I am no expert in reef tank planning, right? And I'm going to take you through my journey with reef tank planning on this main tank that you see in front of you, because I want you guys to understand, like, this is coming from someone who's, this whole podcast episode's coming from someone whose hindsight, just like all of us, is a 2020 deal. And now I understand so much better than I did when I set up this system, what I would have done and what I should have done and, you know, where I should have gone with this and the route and the pace that I should have gone at. So just like all of you, who I'm positive it's basically all of you, who have regrets about certain things that you did or how fast you moved or, you know, just critical decision points that, you know, didn't go the way that you hoped they'd go along the way, I'm right in this camp. And that's why I'm using the content later on in the episode of one of my core subscribers, a guy named Dusk. I want to show how he's doing things on his future systems, because the guy is one of the best reef tank planners that I've encountered in the hobby, right? I'm sure there are other people like him out there, but the content that he sent me, or the material that he's generated, are so far and away above whatever I, you know, clobbered together for this system when I planned it, and so much better than what I could produce even now. Like, maybe now I could do it now that I've seen what he's done, but, and that's kind of why I want to show you guys what he did, so that, you know I'm going to emulate some of it on my next tank years down the line, and I'm sure some of you will want to as well. So, and there will even be some visuals, and for audio people, when I get to that point way later on in the podcast where I'm showing visuals, I will do my utmost to describe to you what I'm showing without going overboard, just so that you get an idea and we keep moving along as I show visuals. So, all right. I will start with my quote-unquote planning process for the tank that is in front of you. So some of you guys will know this story, but when I returned to being a teacher and decided I didn't want to work 70 hours a week for big money in the private sector anymore, because it was, you know, for lack of better description, you know, causing my soul to turn black and die, I decided I was going to go back to a much better work-life balance pursuit in life, and something that, you know, I really felt good about doing. It also came with a move, right? Like, you know, when we made this big decision, when I made it, and then my wife was on board with it, and we went forth together to plan what we were going to do with our lives from here on, part of that did not include the place that we were living before, which was in the Midwest. We were just like, you know, my wife is from Mississippi, and I, you know, while some things that this state does are really not my favorite, I really like a couple places in Mississippi, and there were teaching opportunities for me, and we were like, okay, you know, let's nail down, you know, one of these, you know, few kind of, you know, economic hotbed, socially strong communities that exists in certain pockets of this state. And we'll go back down there. So like, I went to grad school down here, so it was coming back for me and for her. So we moved back, and when we moved, I basically broke down a 25-gallon tank that I had, which is actually my daughter's tank now. You guys will have seen videos of it if you follow my YouTube channel. And it was way, way, way overstocked. There had been literally no planning that went into that tank, because it was my first, like, quote-unquote, real tank. And I just kind of, you know, threw things in as I went. So basically, I threw everything from that tank, fish, live rock, coral, inverts, all into, like, you know, 20, 30, 40-gallon totes, like, you know, the kind that you'd buy at Walmart, like clear, heavy-duty totes, and stuck heaters in them, and got, like, car inverters to put in the moving truck so I could drop heaters and wave makers and everything, and then literally started the, like, 14 hours in a moving truck, 14-hour drive south. And it was absolute mayhem. I mean, like, fish are floating on the surface halfway there. More of them are dying. Like, corals are shriveling. The live rock is sliding around and, like, crushing my, crushing my urchins. Like, it was an absolute mess. And anybody who's moved a reef tank, like, thank God it was just a 25-gallon reef tank. If I had to move this tank in front of you, my, you know, 110-gallon reef system, 14 hours across the country, I can almost say with certainty that, like, I would not do it. I would probably break it down, sell stuff, donate things to other reefers that could drive here and take things, and then dump the rest of it at my LFS and then just kind of like start again, because it is, I think, the least advisable thing ever, moving your reef tank. And actually, as I talk about this, that's one thing I didn't even have in my list of notes, was considering your living situation. So like, you know, take this as a, you know, kind of a parable about this. Like, if you are in an apartment that you do not own, you have no idea what's going to happen. Like, you know, something could happen to you, like what happened to me, where you're like, I can't continue in this path of my life. I need a new path. Of course, you have more control over that. But what happens if, like, you know, somebody falls asleep with a cigarette in their hand and burns down half the apartment complex and you're getting evicted out of nowhere? Like, basically what I'm saying is, living situation and the permanence of that living situation is of critical, critical importance. And if you're in an apartment, like oftentimes, especially with the outrageous cost of housing in America and the ridiculously low amount of money that most Americans are paid, I think that, like, it'd be best for you to have a smaller system that you could handle moving quite easily if house ownership is not on the imminent horizon for you, right? Like, and even if it is on the imminent horizon for you, wait until you get into the house, right? Wait until you get into something you own before you get a large system, like, you know, 60 gallons and up. Like, just wait. You know, it really does pay to wait until you have some real confident permanence in your situation before you take on something massive in cost and in time consumption and in, you know, like just like placement permanence, because moving one of these things even to another part of your house is a nightmare unto itself. So that's my, and like everybody's situation is different. I'm not, you know, pushing something on you. Everybody can do what they're going to do. But my instinct personally as a reef keeper, if I were in an apartment, I would not have the system that I have in front of you. But luckily, we were buying a house when we moved from the state we were previously in to this one. So I had this like opportunity, right? And, you know, the costing of everything and like what I had saved with the, you know, significant money that I made in my previous career, this was kind of the cherry on top of the whole move for me. And I was like, you know what? Like, I could do a lot of things with this money, but like, you know, this whole move in my life was about increasing my happiness with my existence and therefore like the happiness of my family, because they get to see me more. I get to be around more. I get to be there for my kid more. I get to, you know, not be exhausted and falling asleep the second I get home so I can spend time with my wife. Like, one thing for me in this that I really want, in addition to the career shift, is a new tank. So basically, I had I moved into this house not having ordered a new tank yet, because the move was so chaotic that it was literally like the reef tank was the last thing that I broke down in that house that we were in, that we were renting up north. So like, I break it all down, and as I'm driving in the moving truck, like watching fish suffering, watching, you know, corals get smashed by live rock in the buckets as every time I make a turn in the moving truck, I'm like thinking also, I mean, my stress level was so high. I took like a year off my life on that 14 hours, but I'm thinking to myself also like, okay, when I get down there, then what? Like, I've got this 25-gallon tank, you know, wrapped in blankets in the back of the moving truck. Hopefully it's not broken, and I can set that up if I want to go with this 25-gallon tank again. But, like, I also know that I have some surplus funds that I could put into, like, a real reef tank, but I haven't put any thought into it. And these creatures in the interim are just going to be suffering, because like, think about it. You're setting up a whole new life in a whole new place. I've spoken about it before, but when you have a family, the reef tank is not their main concern, right? Nor should it be your main concern. Your main concern, like, should objectively be like your family, your partner, your children, right? Your new career, whatever. So I knew that the reef tank situation was going to be on the back burner for a while, but I also know in my mind's eye, like, okay, you know, there are lead times. There are lead times associated with this kind of stuff. There's shipping time. If I get a new tank, it might not be in stock. Like if the one I want, you know, they're sold out of, you know, they have to organize the shipping of it. I have to like take a day off work to receive it. I got to have people who can move a big tank into my house with me, etc. It's a whole thing. It can't be some like I made it this way, but you cannot. This is kind of a do as I say, not as I do. Like, it can't be some whim that you just like take all this on. That's a bad bet. You can get away with it, but it's a horrible, horrible bet. So I basically went the horrible, horrible bet route, and it was my own doing. Moved into this house and was like, all right, I've decided I'm getting a large tank, right? I'm not going to set up this nano again. To be honest with you, so much of the equipment got, you know, shoved into boxes and in disarray in the moving truck and then buried in my garage when we desperately unloaded everything because we had to take the U-Haul back. I'm like, I don't even know where everything is. Like, I am starting a new tank. You can imagine how happy that made my wife. So she was not thrilled. But I hop on. I knew I wanted a water box eventually. So I got on Waterbox's website, and I'm like, all right, you know, what do I want? And my dream style of tank was a peninsula tank, as you can see in front of you, because what a cool thing to be able to see fish and coral from three sides. Do you think I can see, like, looking in front of you? For audio listeners, this tank is shoved against a wall. So, like lengthwise. So, I can only see in two sides of this tank because I'm forging ahead without checking with my partner about any of what I'm doing. I'm just like, I'm getting a new tank, and she's like, I understand, like, you know, this is a big thing you want to do, a big piece of your life that you want to expand. I get it. Go for it. But that, like, I don't know what she assumed, but I just assumed I could do whatever I wanted. That was a bad assumption. So the peninsula tank comes, and I get the stand all assembled. I have my dad, who's like happening passing through the area on a business trip, stop in and help me lift this thing up on top of the stand, and I place it in the house. We have the staircase that leads to the second floor, and there's this beautiful like wrought iron railing. It's part of the reason my wife really wanted this house, was this beautiful wrought iron work that like leads up the stairs. I look at those stairs, not caring about really the aesthetic of them. To me, they're stairs, right? Like, I just want to be able to go up and down them. And I'm like, this is perfect, because when you walk in the front door, you'll be able to look through the wrought iron railing and you will see one side of the peninsula tank. Then you can walk past the stairway and you can come around into the living room and you can see the other side of it. And I can walk a little ways up those stairs and easily reach my arm down in the tank to maintenance it. I have this all planned out. So I move it into position with my dad. My wife gets home from doing errands or whatever, and she's like, what is the tank doing there? I'm like, oh, that's where it's going to go. She's like, yeah, that's not happening. You know, I was the one who had switched careers, moved across the country, bought this reef tank without consulting her about the style of it or anything, and just thrown it up. So, like, in this moment, I didn't want to die on this hill, right? I'm not an unfair partner in this way. I was just like, okay, like, right now, like, my tallies on this board are more numerous than yours. You get to get a tally on the board. I will move the tank. So then we spent like 3 days just debating, where the heck are we going to put this tank? And I wanted it in an area that she wanted to hide it away somewhere, which is often, you know, the spouse's immediate reaction, especially in a nice new house. They're like, put this somewhere where you can go and deal with it, and then we don't have to deal with it in our space. The compromise where we met was like, I'm going to put it against a wall, which I really didn't want to do, but it's going to eat up less space that way. And we'll put it on kind of like a dead side of the living room where there's not nearly as much foot traffic. And then I can enjoy it like in the general space of the house, but it's not on her beautiful railing and it's not sticking out from the wall into the middle of the room. You get the picture, right? Like, it had to be this big compromise thing, this big stressful discussion that lasted 3 days. the fish are all in these tubs with bubblers and wave makers and, you know, like janky heaters. This was a mess. So as soon as I got the location approved, right, and we both agreed on this spot, I fill this thing as quick as I can and dump salt in and get it all mixed up and, you know, proper salinity as quick as I can. Put the live rock in, scape it. I actually took my time, took a couple of days to really, like, you know, plan the scape. That's one thing I really wanted to get right, and I love my aquascape, so I was really happy with how that turned out. But really, like, it was fast. I mean, this stuff, I mean, this is a matter of days. So as soon as everything was set up, I dump in my bacteria, I wait like 48 hours, and then I'm literally like, all right, like, there were like two corals that died and another fish died. And I was like, I've had it. Game over. I'm putting everything in right now. I dumped everything in just immediately. Like, I spent like one afternoon just boom, 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 gluing everything in, you know, catching fish, putting everything into this tank, right? And shocker of all shocks, I lost some livestock because the tank's not mature. It's not ready to go. I had uglies that like choked out some corals along the way because, like, again, like, you know, you want to take your time and like let the tank break in and let the tank settle in and let the tank cycle and let all of this stuff transpire. Didn't wait on any of this stuff because in my mind, I hadn't set up any kind of contingency or holding plan outside of like a big tub and made all these like, you know, quick decisions about things. And I had to move here because the semester was going to start and I had to work. And it all just, I was thrown together, right? That's the whole moral of this story is everything you see in front of you, despite the fact that I've mitigated some of my initial bad decisions with a lot of work over the last like a year, it was still completely thrown together, right? And I also have regrets with just like the overall setup of it. If I had this to do again, honestly, like, I don't know why I fought so hard to like have it in the living room. If I had taken my time and just like slowed down and breathed for a minute, I probably would have had this in like our formal dining room that we didn't end up using for really anything. It's technically a playroom, but our kid barely plays in there. And right now there's just like two nano tanks against the wall in there. And honestly, I would have just liked to have all three of my tanks in there. I mean, that would have worked out really well. I didn't know how I would use the house at that point. I just moved into it. But again, that's some of the like, let yourself sit with it and really think this stuff through, especially with regards to placement of the tank, right? So I'm going to kind of like, as I go through some of my own regrets, I'm going to start getting into my notes here. So like, note one, by the way, that I wrote down on this list, check with your partner, right? We already covered that. Pretty important. Another thing to consider, like windows and light pollution. So like in this room, I'll just use mine as a good example for some of this stuff. In this room, we have, you can't see it, it's off to the right of the view that you're seeing right now, but we have this door that is a glass door. So like there's like an 8 foot tall by 3 foot wide pane of glass centered on the door. And when the sun comes, like basically when the sun moves over the backyard in the afternoon, there's a direct shot that makes it underneath the roof of like the roofing of my porch and comes right in. And if this side of the tank right here on the right hand side of my tank was not the overflow side, that sunlight would go right into the tank. And I live in Mississippi. Like, we try to not crank our air conditioning to save money. And I'm telling you, like, that residual sunlight making its way in, not even residual sunlight, I mean, that's pretty direct sunlight coming through that glass door, it would heat up the tank, right? And I'm sure it still creates a little bit of residual heat, even on that side of the tank that's the overflow side. So kind of think about, like, you know, if you're putting this near windows, are you going to put blackout curtains on those windows? Are you going to, you know, do those windows, even with curtains on them, heat up that room? You know, are the windows sealed well? So in the winter, is that room going to be cold? And like, you need to account for that with like an extra heater or something like that. Like all these are, you know, is that a window that you want to, that you can open? like, you know, to get your pH boosted, like all this kind of stuff, like light and windows and airflow. That's all stuff that, like, you don't really think about when you're, you know, rushing through a tank setup, but like, it's important. It's really important. Okay. It ends up being more important than you would imagine it being. Let's see here. Engineering concerns. So like, this wasn't applicable for me really, because, unless I wanted to put it on the second floor, then it would become applicable. But I can't remember the kind of foundation that this house has. Man, my architectural terminology feels real weak right now. I have a, like, basically, there are different kinds of foundations that you can have for your home. I know one of them is kind of an adjustable foundation style. So, like, you have, like, struts and supports that are, you know, made of wood or metal or whatever that are underneath the house that, like, provide support all underneath your house. Those are the kind of houses that you can crawl under, right? I'm sorry that I can't remember these terms, but they're the type of house in America, at least, that you can crawl under, and you can actually adjust the supports that are under the house. And then you have, I don't know if it's called a solid foundation, basically a poured concrete foundation for your home. That's what we have. So like, my house is on like just a big plat of like poured concrete. And so I'm not worried about, like, you know, needing to shore up support underneath where I place this tank. So like that, I could have done anything with that in my situation. But if you're going with a larger size tank, and I've seen people on forums debate like when you have to start worrying about the weight of the tank. And I think by and large, what I have seen people say, what I've seen more experienced reef keepers say, is that, and by the way, it could be wrong because none of them claim to know for sure. They're all like, I don't know, but anything over 100 gallons total system is when you need to start probably double checking about, like, you know, the weight of it and like what your house in the location you choose can reasonably take. So think about that too. Don't just set up a 100 gallon tank on a second floor and assume that like it's going to be okay. Like, you probably want to have, you know, and some kind of person with engineering background come in and say, okay, you know, you can have it in this room, but it needs to be over here because there's like a, you know, wall with supports in it below this area of the room. You know, you want somebody to just verify that for you. It's pretty important. So yeah, pretty important for sure. Another thing to consider, and this is really only applicable for larger tanks as well, but is there like a closet or a utility room somewhere in the house? Or like, is there a way that you could go through the floor and into the basement to create a fish area or fish room? Because with, like, especially when you get up into larger systems, like larger than this for sure, like if I personally was going up over, I don't know, if I was going for like a 200 gallon or up system, I for sure, by the way, would have like tried to put this tank in a particular area of the house that I knew I could go through the wall and like get into a closet that we don't really use. So like, there are situations where like a fish room's, like the possibility of a fish room or an area of your basement that can become a fish area and maybe house like an oversized sump or whatever. Like, that may become like a major deciding factor in where the placement of the tank actually is most advantageous to you, right? Especially if you're an experienced reef keeper. Someone who's not an experienced reef keeper and is just diving into a new system probably doesn't understand how amazing it is on a larger system to have the option of a fish room. But having the option of like some kind of equipment space area or a dedicated like small room where you could potentially place, even if not a sump, just all your gear, or like, you know, throw a sink in there if you have the money and the budget or whatever. Like, for larger systems, that's a pretty incredible thing to have. It really can make the maintenance of the tank long term be something bearable for you. I really believe that. So I don't feel like a pressing need for it with a tank of this size. But, you know, whatever, in 6, 7, 8 years, when I do eventually upgrade the system, like, yeah, that's going to be something that I take into account. And it's going to mean that this tank definitely is not going to stay here, right? Like, the new tank is not going to stay here. Yeah, I'll get in another episode, I'll get into like dream build for the future. I'm not going to like go there deep in this episode, but yeah, I mean, I think all of us know that like if we had our druthers and we could really create like a dream system within reason, of course, like there are other areas of the house where that would probably go for a lot of us. So keep that in mind. And last, what I put on here was electrical. So, I mean, depending on like most people are not going to have a system where like they need to worry about, but you know, how many electrical points they have necessarily. Like, you know, I could get away. So I have all the equipment on this tank plugged into two electrical wall outlets, right? Like two separate ones. So I forget what, I'm terrible with electrical guys. I forget like what the amperage or whatever it is that those can provide. But basically, like by running LED lights, especially, I don't get near, I've looked it all up before, and I don't get near to like pushing the limitations of what these wall outlets can provide in terms of electricity required to run my reef tank. Like, I don't get near, you know, to that max. And I think anybody with like a 100-gallon tank or under doesn't, depending on what kind of lighting you're running, probably doesn't really have to stress about this. As long as you're in a reasonably modern home, if you have some like really antiquated electrical in your house, you probably want to have an electrician come out and check that for sure. But unless you're running metal halide, I would say, like, if you're going to run, you know, some big metal halide units, that's another area of the hobby I don't know much about. All I know about those is that they give off a lot of heat. And they require a lot of electricity. Some of the newer models might be more power efficient. I don't know. But I know they're not as efficient as LED. So, like, depending on your setup equipment-wise in that regard, calculate how much wattage you're really going to be pulling. But I'm talking, when I talk about electrical in a planning sense, from my experience that I can speak to, you know, with any knowledge, I'm talking about placement of the wall outlets. So unfortunately for me, one of the two wall outlets is like 3 feet from the tank. So I had to get like a heavy, heavy duty, like Iron Forge brand, you know, like GFCI, like auto triggering GFCI extension cord that I ran like 3 feet along the wall in a cord chase and then up, you know, through the back of my tank stand and into the electrical. Like, that was it's not a ton of fun looking at it. It's not a ton of fun, like, seeing that I've eaten up this outlet on the wall and, like, it's yellow and it's just, like, I don't love that at all aesthetically. The other wall outlet behind my tank is literally, that's the problem. It's behind my tank. So it's not like, you know, audio listeners, I'm kind of pointing to the rear right corner of my tank. It doesn't fall like in line with this corner. It's like 6 inches past. So like what I did was I pushed it just far enough. Like, my wife was real particular about where exactly we position this thing, but I insisted on pushing the tank like half a foot away from that outlet so that if there ever was some kind of big splash event that hit the wall, the salt water cannot just run straight down the wall and into the outlet. However, I cannot for the life of me easily reach this outlet. Like, there's no way. I have to snake my hands through such a tight opening and so many cords that I've got running between my water change cabinet and my main display system. Like, it's very difficult. Like, basically what I'm saying is you don't want your points of power to be too far from the tank, nor do you want them to be like obscured by your equipment, right? And like difficult to access. So I've got a little of both going on and it is not ideal, right? In the future, like, you know, when I get closer to, you know, pulling the trigger on a dream build years down the line, I would very much consider building into the budget, having an electrician come in and like custom drop points where I want them, I think that it's, you know, probably well worth it, especially when you size up to a certain point. So nano tank people, though, people who've got smaller tanks, you're in a much better position because you really only need one modern wall outlet. And like, really, you can kind of shift a nano tank around without like, you know, offending a spouse too badly or, you know, really impacting the flow of a space like foot traffic or anything like that. So you have a little more flexibility there, and you could actually pretty easily like hide that like directly adjacent to the stand or, you know, keep it accessible. That's one critical advantage for sure that nano tank people have is that when it comes to electrical, that situation is much less complicated, right? So pros and cons to going large tank or smaller tank, but smaller tank definitely wins when it comes to electrical situations. Okay. So let's get off of like big picture placement stuff. Okay. Let's shift gears. This is kind of, so this next part here is kind of what I imagine I should have done. And it's something that I learned in my previous career where I helped space plan and design, which is ironic that I helped space plan and design things and like, you know, like add arrays of options and pick and choose from things in my previous career and was quite good at it and made good money at it because when it comes to my own life, especially in reef keeping, I have not taken those principles to heart really until now, until I've had time to like really sit and experience a bigger tank and like think this stuff through and think through like what of that skill set that I learned in my previous career that I could bring to bear in reef keeping. But I think that what, like, I think what a lot of people should do, and this is what I had a lot of clients do whenever I was, you know, like designing a whole litany of things that we were going to put in their space and how we were going to place it and et cetera. I always told clients, like, start with your dream scenario within reason, of course. Like when I say dream scenario, I don't mean Andrew Sandler's Polo Reef main tank. That, like, within reason, right? Within like, within the realm of like, you may someday be able to achieve this, right? Like, and I don't mean like 50 years down the line. I mean like in like a 10-year span, this is something that might be feasible, you know, based on your current trajectories and your like judgment of yourself. And then after you've kind of built out this loose dream scenario, apply some loose equipment cost to everything and some loose estimates for like fish, coral, live rock, et cetera, and kind of see where that loose number falls. If you're outside the realm of what you can afford, right? This is where finances start to really come in. If you're outside the realm of what you can afford and you know it, just start backing it down. And really, I would back it down just by tank size, because by virtue of backing down on tank size, of course, you're going to back down equipment costs. So like when you go, if you're like, my dream tank's an 8-foot tank. Oh, that's, you know, a couple thousand too much. Let's back that down to 6 feet. Now, maybe the light bars that you're getting don't need to be nearly as long. Now, maybe you can drop a couple of LED lights, like radions or whatever, off of the list. So now your skimmer size is down. Maybe you can go with a budget skimmer now. Like basically, you're sizing down all of the requirements along with the ongoing cost to maintain that tank. So even though it's kind of torturous to see like, you know, what you really, really want and sort of apply a loose cost to it to get a ballpark and then not be able to get it, it's better to do that and then inch your way back down until you're within your range, I think, than going to way too small right out of the gate, right? I think it's better to do that way because this is the other thing that, and I think this is more common. The other route that people take is they're like, okay, a larger tank, you know, let's say a 50-gallon tank is terrifying to me because I've never been in this hobby before. So I'm gonna get like a 10-gallon tank. And by the way, this is kind of what I did. Now I champion people starting with a smaller tank, right? But I got like a 13-gallon tank right out of the gate, and like it was clear to me very quickly that like I was like heavily invested and interested in this hobby and was like I wanted everything right now. So I had like a Fluval Evo with like a Neptune Apex attached to it. That doesn't make sense, right? It just doesn't make sense. And there are people who are gonna quickly recognize like I'm gonna like I want more out of this hobby quickly. And what they're gonna do is they're gonna like bump up in size through several tanks and spend tons of money on new gear every time they bump up in size. When like really after a while in reef keeping, you should probably know like if this is a life thing for you. Like I think it is for most of my listeners. I think my viewership, my listenership, like I think you guys are all pretty hardcore. And so like I think we all probably have a pretty good idea that we're in this for the long haul, right? After you realize that, and I realized that quickly, if that's you and you're like not uncertain, you're like a long haul person, before you bump up like to se several smaller tanks along the way to the eventual like larger tank that you're dreaming of, I would like pause, hit the pause button and take stock of like the amount of gear that you're probably going to buy going that route, as opposed to just saying, okay, let me just stop now before this gets out of control and just take my time for the next few months and plan out that bigger system and really figure out what it's going to cost. I think that's why I think starting like Dream Tank and working backwards and figuring out what you can really conceivably fit in your budget is a good move for people who know for sure that they're going to be like in this hobby for the long haul and they're like really invested. And if you're listening to this reef keeping podcast 42 minutes in, that's you, by the way. Like, I'll just break that news to you. That's you. So yeah, I in my unesteemed opinion, better to start with a reasonable dream and scale it back a little than like start way too small and then buy all this gear you don't need several times over before you finally upgrade into the big tank. And then maybe you've spent so much money on the journey to the big tank that like the big tank isn't everything that you would want it to be, right? Because you just can't conceivably sink more money into the hobby at this point. That is my own personal that struggle. Like that's really what happened to me. And that's all I can speak to, right? I'm sure other people have other experiences with costing and their journey to get to the point that they're at and you know how they look at things. And if you have different perspective, totally fine. In fact, I want to hear about it in the comments, you know, after this. But yeah, I think that for people who are serious about this hobby and pretty hardcore about it, going about it this way makes sense. So, all right. This is the next point I had. Don't forget to take into account the rough cost of fish and livestock. So look, when I show you what Dusk has done later on in the podcast, what he's done with regards to fish and livestock, my initial reaction is almost like he's basically planned out like every coral placement that he's got in the tank and identified like fish and stuff. And you know, that to me, because I've done it kind of piecemeal forever, that almost seems extreme. But then I'm like, it shouldn't be extreme. It really shouldn't be extreme to kind of plan out the type of coral, like maybe the theme of your tank. Like, is it a softy tank? Is it an LPS tank? Is it a mixed reef? Is it a high-end SBS tank? Is it, you know, whatever. And then the fish that you're going to put in it and like make sure that they're all compatible with one another and that you've done all your research on them and any kind of specialty inverts. Like, that stuff, like, I'm always like, well, you get to that when you get to that. And I have to stop thinking that way. And I think all of us do. Like, I think all of us have to, like, we're so obsessed with the cost of the tank and the cost of the equipment and how we're going to set all that up. And, like, you know, because especially to gearheads, which a lot of us are, like, that's really exciting. And that's like the upfront cost that we can, like, dial in that cost with certainty. But we can't forget about the livestock. And so, like, I think, like, a rough plan for livestock at least and then like some kind of like associated costs, maybe just a lump sum cost that you tack into the budget just as like a placeholder. Like, I know it'll be around-ish this, probably more, but like hopefully around this. That's probably a good move to have in your budget, right? Yeah, probably not bad. And last, what I have here is with regards to equipment, like there's a couple different ways to think about equipment. So you can do, there's really three routes. One route is you get super high-end equipment that's high, really I shouldn't say high-end, I should say just high quality, right? Because by the way, there's some super quality equipment that's affordable, but like a lot of it is expensive. So are you going to go the quality route and probably spend more in almost every case for every category of equipment? Or are you going to go the like almost disposable equipment route? And that's not to say that that equipment is not good at what it is for, right? And by the way, I've had a lot of like cheaper or quote unquote disposable brand equipment that has lasted even longer than some high-end stuff that I've had and surprised the heck out of me. But there are just like brands and lines of equipment generally have a reputation, and generally there's a cost associated with that particular reputation. And you have to kind of weigh this out. Like, you know, am I going to go a route where like I can hope this equipment lasts a long time and pay less for it, but probably I'm just going to like, you know, here and there have to replace things and I'm going into it knowing that? Or am I going to like, you know, go with companies that have like serious warranties and that I can, you know, reasonably expect to either have the equipment last 5 to 10 years on its own, or like, you know, have like a 5-year warranty where if something goes wrong, I am not paying for that equipment again. It is getting fixed or replaced by someone else. That's an important thing. And it's literally like a category by category thing, right? You know, lighting, like as much as I razz Ecotec guys, like when I first got my Radeon G6s, when they came in, it was like they'd had a bad production run where they had like over-torqued the screws that hold the plastic body together, because as the lights would ramp up in the morning and then ramp down in the evening, I could hear the plastic creaking and cracking, like, you know, just little creaky noises. And that's my theory, is that the screws were over-torqued, you know, putting too much pressure on it, so that as that plastic heated up from the LEDs being on or cooled off, the plastic was expanding and contracting and causing little noises to occur. I don't know if that's why, but I recorded the noises happening right at the moment the lights started to, you know, ramp or cool, and took a whole bunch of pictures of like the screws, which you could see they were, you know, you can actually see a little bit of depression in one of them. And I explained the whole thing to them over the phone and then sent a follow-up email that they could look at. And they straight up replaced all three of those lights. They were like, are bad. So as much as I razz Ecotec, like when it comes to warranty, I can't really fault how they took care of me, right? Like, you know, they definitely took care of me. And there's at least right now, like it could change in the future with any company, but right now there are companies out there who like will actually take care of you like that. If you get a product and it's not working right, you know, and it's not been a crazy amount of time, like they'll take care of it. So something to consider for sure. However, there's also something to be said for the reliability of a Jabal SLW-10, SLW-20, 30, whatever. If you just want to put Jabals on your tank and set them to random mode and dial in the intensity for wave makers, like I see as many complaints about like Ecotec Vortex rusting out as some weird thing happening with the motor or whatever, as I do about, oh, my Jabal quit on me today. And the difference is, like, you know, if Ecotec's not going to help you, like, and again, Ecotec's helped me to this point, so I'm not dragging them, but I'm saying if Ecotec decides not to help you, you're out hundreds of dollars. Whereas for like an SLW-20, you're out, what, $70? I mean, that's a big difference, like $450 versus $70. I mean, I don't know, right? Yeah, you have to weigh these things, and you have to weigh them by equipment category. So I mean, the way that I did it was, I guess I have like AI power heads, which to me are like mid-tier, right? I think they're too expensive for what they are, but I do like the controllability of them. And so far I've had none of them fail me. I hear a lot of people say Neros fail them. Mine have been rock solid, so I can't complain about those. I also went with like Quanta Pro Reef Light bars, which have been phenomenal. The build quality is phenomenal. The light that they put off and like how evenly distributed and just like good looking it is phenomenal. The oh, what's it called? The like power brick or whatever. I'm sure that there's a better, what is it called? Ballast? Maybe I might be really smart about electrical right now. The ballast on them, I think that's really what it's called, is like high quality as heck with a super long, thick, heavy duty extension cord and this like steel housed ballast on it. Guys, like those light bars cost more, yes, than like a Chinese AliExpress run of the mill light bar. And those Chinese AliExpress light bars work. I mean, I'm not knocking those, but Luca in Wisconsin, the owner of Quanta Reef, produces these. Not, he doesn't produce the light bars. He has them specially produced to his design specification, shipped in from overseas to him, and then he handles personally all the customer service, all the shipping, all the warranty, all the everything. And he's like a tangible person that you can reach out to, and he's like super dedicated to his business and super dedicated to the science behind reefing, and he will have your back. And so like paying up for those light bars versus getting some Ali E bars, I like there are certain things, lighting being one of them, that I'm just like, you know what? I'm gonna get something of higher quality here and bank on this lasting me at least 5 years, you know, and having support and like somebody to troubleshoot this with if something goes wrong. So take that for what you will. Everyone has different priorities. Some people just are like the cheapest reef lights have spectrum that's comparable to some of the best considered reef lights on the market. I'm just gonna get cheap reef lights. Like, fine. I have no problem with that. This is just my personal approach on it. Like, there are just certain things where like it would nag me if I didn't, you know, have some trust in it. And all that being said about the lights on this tank, I mean, this is my main tank. On my nano tank in the other room, I've got a Nycrew Hyperreef 150. Because I spent $150 on it, and I know if it goes for a swim in the tank and doesn't turn back on, I'm only out $150, right? That's a total budget setup, and that light works great. So I'll get out of the weeds with this part of the conversation. This is really kind of an equipment categories and like where whether you go the route of like reputation and quality and cost, higher cost versus like, you know, maybe lesser reputation and cheaper cost, more affordability. That's all in the eye of the beholder and in the experience of the beholder. And that's between you and your wallet and your partner. Like this is, you know, like this and your journey in reef keeping. Like those are the things that's between. And like this is just how I approach it. I just know that you're gonna have some mixture of those things, and you really have to think that out when you're going all in on like a new system, right? When you're planning something out, you really got to weigh some of these things, especially if you're running up against budget costs. So, or like the higher end of your budget. All right. My next point that I had on here is after you've kind of like nailed down the broader strokes and you know, dialed in some of the different categories and routes that you're going to take, and you have kind of a good number on, you know, to place hold fish and coral and all that, I've got it, you know, as a final step to massage out a formal budget with as accurate a cost as you possibly can, and additionally to add in a contingency cost for like unforeseen things. Now, like in my previous career, we do these huge projects in public buildings, and I always added in, like it depended on the project and like the parameters of the project or like what was allowed for contingency. But if my company had its way, about contingency, like we could basically call our shot with contingency, I kid you not, we would put like a 10% contingency in the plan and then return funds to the owner, like if we didn't eat up all that contingency. And this was especially relevant in like, you know, whatever, like older structures that we were doing design work in. And like, the older it got, the more unforeseen things were going to pop up. And I think this is, you know, part of this is how, so like, I'll try to, you know, make this connection. The older and more mysterious and like, you know, potentially like pitfall filled structure I used to deal with in business, the higher my company's contingency cost would go, right? Because there's just stuff that, I mean, you might knock down a wall and you thought it was an empty wall or whatever, and, you know, embedded in this wall is asbestos, you know, and like maybe they did asbestos testing or ceiling or whatever, a floor. You might demo a floor. This happened a lot. You'd have an asbestos tester go in and they would test like one square of the floor. And they'd be like, oh, no, there's nothing here. And this, you know, people who own this structure would be like, oh, yeah, there's nothing there. Then you go in and start demoing floor with your crew. And it's like, oh, actually, there was no asbestos over on that side of the room. But the other side of the room is rife with asbestos. Now we have to shut this entire structure down and like push the project back, incurring all these storage costs. We have to abate this whole thing. So like, that we would go into those jobs in older buildings paranoid. You, depending on your experience in reef keeping, and by the way, even if like some evidence suggests the more experienced you are in reef keeping, the more paranoid you know you should be. Basically, I think all reef keepers should go in being a little bit paranoid, right? If not flat out paranoid about unforeseen costs or unforeseen situations or, you know, just equipment that's going to fail and you need to quickly buy a new one, or who knows? The amount of like surprises that I have encountered that cost me hundreds of dollars in reef keeping, I would literally rank reef keeping as like the most unpredictable thing in my life, right? Literally. And I have a 5-year-old, okay? Like that's unpredictability on a human scale that is hitherto undreamt of before you have children. After you have children, like the fact that I'm still like, yeah, reef keeping still probably like matches or outpaces my own child for unpredictability on a daily basis. Like, and I'm 6 years in and I really earnestly try to pay attention to this and learn in this hobby like every day. That should tell you something. Like, I really think that a healthy contingency cost of at least 10% that you hope to not spend, but you might spend, probably an important thing to have, right? Regardless, even if you spent 1% of that contingency cost, that's still cost that like you've accounted for. So long story short, expect to spend more than you expect to spend, right? Like, like you're gonna. It is gonna happen to you. I've only got a couple more points here before we'll get into like dust stuff, but this point I won't spend a lot of time on because I think so many of us have figured this out for ourselves who've been in this hobby more than a year or two. And you've heard it many times before, which is why I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. But nothing good happens fast in reef keeping. I know that like if there's any like newer reef keepers first year or two who are listening to this, they've heard that before. Because it's such a like trope in the reef keeping hobby, but it's a true one. Like this is like a true thing. You can't understand just how true that is until you have been in the hobby and fallen down every well along the way. Like you just can't. I had no appreciation for it. I heard the old timers say nothing good happens fast in reef keeping so many times. And I just had no respect for it. I was just like, yeah, maybe nothing good happened fast in reef keeping for you back in the 90s, old man. Like, it's a new era, you know? I've got 52 weeks of reefing. You didn't have any of that. Like, no, it's still the same. It's absolutely still the same. And in fact, like, you know, I use BRS as like a reason why it's not the same, but BRS even would tell you that nothing good happens fast in reef keeping, right? Like, again, I knock them a lot. I'll give them credit for that. I've heard Ryan Batchelor and others say that multiple times. Nothing good happens fast in reef keeping. And that's a universal thing across experienced reef keepers. No matter how much, you know, sponsorship or ambassadorship or how big their, you know, the corporate entity behind them is, no matter what, that's like the one common denominator across, like, if you care at all about the hobby, like, which I believe all, like 99.99% of people involved in this industry and hobby do care on some level about it. It's like the one common denominator that everyone with experience agrees on. Nothing happens fast. Nothing good happens fast in reef keeping. So try to not move quickly, despite how exciting it is. Who cares if you have all the money to move quickly? Slow down, right? Take your time. Don't cut corners. Make sure that the tank is, like, you know, perfectly square on the stand. Make sure that the placement is exactly where you want it. Put the tank up and sit with it for a couple days. You might decide you want to move it a foot to the left. Who knows? Like, after you walk around it for a while, you might realize, oh man, my shoulder almost keeps hitting it when I go through this part of the house. I should probably move it 6 inches this way. That kind of stuff can really, like, I mean, it can do everything from helping you avoid disaster all the way down to just making your life a little bit easier and making the hobby more enjoyable. But regardless of where it falls on that spectrum, so many things that serve as, like, challenges or impediments to you long term in the hobby could be taken care of if people just moved slower. Just slow down. What's the rush? You know, besides the excitement, honestly, ask yourself, what's the rush? There's really, I guess the one compelling, quote unquote, rush there would be is inflation. At this, at least in America, at this point in the game, and by the way, I listen to people in the UK, I listen to Reef Dork and them, I know it's the same in a lot of Western countries, at least right now. Inflation's brutal. So, like, okay, if you have the money on hand, buy the equipment that you've decided on and then just sit with it and slowly and methodically put this stuff together. Fill the tank. Just let the water run for a couple days before you put salt in it. Who cares? Just slow down. I trust me, you'll find more stuff by slowing down that you're going to address and that you have the opportunity to address. It will shock you. So, like, and this is something, again, I didn't do this either because I wouldn't or I couldn't when I had this, you know, kind of a dire, weird circumstance where I had to set up this main system in front of you. But to do it over again, I honestly think, like, when I do upgrade this tank, again, years down the line, when that does happen, I will literally, it's going to take me like half a year to slowly set up the new tank. Like, it really will. It will take me that long. I'm going to go into it with the attitude of, like, I care because I love this hobby, but I'm going to force myself to, like, not care so much that I get excited. I'm literally going to tamp down my excitement to slow myself down. I'm going to mentally do that to myself because I know the benefit of slowing down. So just slow down. Again, most of you know, probably know that already, because most of you are probably pretty experienced, but it's critically important. Last point. When it comes to livestock, right? Like, I went through the costing of livestock. That another thing to really, really, really pay attention to is, like, how much are you, like, be cognizant of how much you've really researched these selections. This is another thing that, like, gets overlooked a lot, and then it's, like, you know, talked about later down the line after the pain has faded. But, like, reef keepers have this vision in their mind, every one of us, of, like, what, like, a lot of us are gearheads. We kind of, the gear is one thing, but when it comes to looking straight on into that glass box, right? Like, when it comes to just looking at it, we have this vision in our mind's eye. And a lot of times that vision does not marry up well with reality, right? Like, they're not, like, my vision for this tank would be to have, like, you know, if I just envisioned this tank years ago when I first started reef keeping, I would envision in my mind like an Achilles tang in here, you know, and like, you know, a hippo tang and a powder blue and a, you know, and I'd envision, you know, all kinds of, you know, like tenuous growing everywhere, like just stuff that like, it's absurd when you really just like stop and think about, like, first of all, like size restrictions and fish relationships and, you know, by the way, like inverts that I would want that like would eat coral or, you know, be some kind of like eat other inverts and ruin like the balance of my cleaning crew. There are so many like incompatibilities that you have to pay attention to. So like literally every fish that goes on your list, every coral that goes on your list, every invert that goes on your list for your livestock, you know, group, you really need to do like even fish that you don't suspect you need to do research for or coral that you think you don't need to do research for. I would advise watching a couple of newer, you know, videos on it or just reading an article about it to see if anything new is known or see if anything weird has popped up with it. Like, for instance, elegans corals getting sick in reef tanks starting a few years back. They started to get some disease that was, you know, kind of wiping out elegans coral in the reef keeping hobby for a while there. See what's going on before you dive in and don't just think you know everything. Or even worse, don't ever, ever, ever think that you're the exception or that the creature you chose is the exception, right? Case in point, if you guys are longtime followers of me, you'll know that for a hot minute there, I had a flame angel in this tank, which is one of the fish I have wanted forever. What a gorgeous, stunning fish. And even more torturous, the specimen that I got from Dr. Reef's quarantine fish was literally one of the most beautiful flame angels that I had ever seen. It was so stunning. I was convinced, despite what legions of reef keepers were reporting on forums, videos, what have you, about flame angels nipping at coral, I was utterly convinced it's not going to do it. It's going to be fine. I have a coral beauty in this tank and it doesn't nip coral. So people are overblown, you know, just blowing this problem up to be something it's not. You know, there's got to be tons of reef keepers not replying on the forums who have had flame angel fish that don't nip. You know, I'm going to put one in there. Guys, within 10 minutes, it was going to town on my acros. Within 10 minutes. I couldn't even believe it. I'm literally just staring at it like I literally had the fish trap in the tank within 1 hour of the fish being in there. I am dead serious. Just to encapsulate it. By the way, it went right into the fish trap. A bunch of people said it's really hard to catch those. Maybe it is, but like mine just boom, right in the fish trap. And I guess it was probably hungry from transit, but it was mind blowing. Anyway, guys, like don't think for a second that you're like some fish with a terrible reputation or some coral with a reputation for, you know, having longer sweepers than you ever thought it would or like whatever. Trust me, if that many people are saying it, it's probably not a good bet. It's probably just not. Or a fish that's quote unquote semi-aggressive. And you're like, well, you know, I have one other semi-aggressive fish that's not aggressive. This one won't be aggressive. It's probably going to be aggressive, right? There's just so many instances I can think, so many horror stories that I've read and heard in the hobby of people convincing themselves like mine's going to be different. It's probably not. And again, there's no way me saying this is going to stop anybody at all. Somebody who listens to this podcast is going to go buy a flame angel fish in the next 30 days and have the same exact result that I did. And they're literally going to think to themselves, oh, yeah, he was completely right about that. Like, it's like, yeah, like, you know, again, you might be the exception, but the chances are so astronomically low. It's like winning the lottery almost with some of these animals. So try, especially while the tank establishes and matures, to get things that are going to be compatible, that are going to be a safe bet, and move slow as you accumulate things. Like, you know, move slow in accumulating coral. Like, you can lay out all the coral that you want, even plan placement for it in the tank. Be selective of the coral. Like, move slow with it. You know, don't add too many snails in right from the start so that half of them starve out. Like, add in 10 and then add 10 more, etc. Nothing good happens fast, right? Gauge the impact of what you're doing to the tank as you add things to the tank. Give it a few days, give it a couple weeks, give it a couple months, depending on what you're trying to do. Dial in dosing, figure out lighting, figure out whatever it is that that creature requires, and find out what the impact of it is and how everything's working before you proceed again. Yeah? I mean, like, that's just, if there's anything you take away from, like, planning in general, like, you can ignore everything else I said. When it comes, like, this is a really critical one biologically. Like, when it comes to the biology, the living things in your tank, right, this aspect of planning, this is, like, the big takeaway, is, like, just please move slow and do your research. Like, do real research and pay attention to what successful reef keepers are saying. Like, if they're saying it doesn't work for them, it's probably not going to work for you. I've found that to be true time and time and time again. I can't stress it enough. So, it's a lot of talking. Okay, let's take a look at what Dusk has for us, which I think is pretty darn cool. So what I'm going to do, because I'm so low tech, is I'm literally, like, this phone right here is on a stand. I'm just going to pick this stand up and, like, angle it down at my computer screen so that people can see it. And again, for audio listeners, I'm going to, like, kind of, like, take you through what we're looking at, right? And just describe it as we go. So the first thing I want to show you, and I'm not going to, like, go slow, but I am going to give you an overview of it. And you're welcome, if you're watching the video, to pause it, right? And audio viewers can, like, listen to what I'm saying, you know, as many times as they want, obviously. The first thing I'm going to show you here is what Dusk has done to compare, like, to basically lay out the cost of a couple different options that he was considering going with, right? Or still is. I need to reread his email, but he's basically, what you need to pay attention to is just how much detail there is here. And mind you, I converted this to a PDF so that it would be easier to work with and, like, pull up and everything just with my machine. He laid this all out like, you know, some Microsoft Excel genius. So keep in mind, like, for my purposes, it was best as a list for you to appreciate the amount of detail so I could scroll through it. This guy, like, laid this all out in, like, honeycombed it all out in Microsoft Excel. Just incredibly impressive. So let me angle you down here. So this right here is the, like, so audio listeners, he's got what kind of tank he wants, right? Like, you know, as one of his options. And that includes, like, you know, the where he's getting the tank from, what the custom tank cost was, the shipping, the mounting, you know, the shipping of the mount, the exact sump model, and then all the associated equipment with it. So, like, you know, radions, Kessels, Vortex, cooling fans, you know, I mean, there's stuff on here as cheap as, like, $35 for, you know, jugs and stuff like that. Like, he's got, like, every piece of his aquarium controller broken out with associated costs and, like, subtotals and, like, final totals. And guys, it is, and it looks like, you know, this is so much. It's really not. It's really not when you're talking about the kind of cost that goes into this hobby. A lot of you will have seen my cost video for my main tank here. Guys, it can be, like, easily 20 grand if you're a gearhead and you want to include a whole bunch of awesome gear and nerd out on this stuff and, like, put a full controller in place so that you can have automation. And it's wild. Like, it can get out of control way past what you thought it would so quickly. So having this all mapped out, the advantages of it, there just are not disadvantages to doing this, basically, is what I'm trying to say. There is no disadvantage to doing it. So the next thing I'm going to show you from Dusk, like that kind of speaks for itself. This next one, audio listeners, you're at a disadvantage. And like maybe hop over on YouTube and just like zip forward to this point in the podcast, you know, like record the minute where I start this and like go over there and look at it if you want to. I'll try to explain it as I go. I can't spend like tons of time on it is the problem. It's more of like you take this in and appreciate it visually kind of thing. But basically what Dusk has done here is this, what it was a PowerPoint he produced for himself and his wife. And he basically like did everything from CAD renderings of like, wait, CAD, like AutoCAD, like, I mean, that this is how these things appear, like design software renderings of what his basement and what the stand and what the tank and like the light mounts and everything would look like. And then from there, literally got into like renders of like zones within the tanks where he would want to place coral. So, I mean, this is like, and again, that's where like I looked at this initially and I was beyond impressed. And then there's a voice in the back of my head like, well, that's, you know, pretty extreme though. And then, but then the logic kind of kicks in and goes, no, wait a minute, it's not that extreme. And considering the amount of money, time, effort, passion that you're going to put into this and what a permanent fixture in your living space it's going to be, we probably should just be doing what this guy is doing. So, you know, and again, there are some reef keepers who do, but not, I would venture to say not many at all. So here's the next piece of this, okay? So, like, unfortunately, when I converted this to a PDF so I could go through it easier, it kind of cut some of it off. But look, you can see, audio listeners, I'll describe, like, this is a render of the stand and the tank, right? So, like, he's got, like, the stand and tank and sump and in his living space, like, you know, a fish room or a fish, like, you know, equipment space opposite the whole tank area. Placements of chairs and stuff like that within that space. So, and by the way, like you can see, I've got a pretty new computer and it's, I mean, this is so, there's so much detail. It's literally struggling to render some of it. So you guys can see just some of the notes about like dimensions and wall cutouts and framing and air ducts. Like he has taken into account. And again, this is a very, these are like large systems that he's dealing with. Like the one that we're about to look at on the next page is like a 220. But again, like, you know, this may not all be, not all of this is, not all of this is like something that a nano tank owner needs to deeply concern themselves with. But this right here, so this is a map of different species of coral that he has like laid out in like a, you know, basically a box representing the tank, like where he would want to place these things. That right there is totally applicable to a nano tank where space is at an absolute premium. I would encourage nano tank owners, instead of just throwing stuff into their tank that looks cool to them, figure out the relationships between corals, of course, do that research I talked about earlier, and then kind of map this out. Even though it feels a little absurd because it's not like a norm, just understand like how little space you really have and like, you know, really use it. Don't waste it, right? I mean, this is a 220 right here and you can see how much thought he's put into the zones of every kind of coral that he would want. He's got like, you know, like ovals and circles representing like the zones where these corals will be and their species names and everything called out. So, you know, here's a 90 gallon that he's laid out. Same deal. I mean, this is, it just, it look, you can see at the bottom also, like, he's got the amount of, all the amounts of inverts and types of inverts that he wants called out here. Stunning. Like, you know, what kind of fish he wants. He's got everything, like, you know, labeled to charts. And again, guys, like, not all of us are even, like, I'm not capable of some of this work. I'd have to, like, you know, hire people to do some of this. Like plumbing, you know, this is one I would do for sure. Like, look at the plumbing that he's got called out. Every individual piece and part of a plumbing setup completely called out, and you know, all of the different sizes of it, and he's obviously got it all planned out based on that space plan. So this plumbing plan is probably very accurate. All this kind of stuff becomes so important to dialing in, like, you know, a very spot on cost for what you're trying to do. So I'll just kind of like skim through some of this, guys. He's got everything. The end of it is a lot of like research on different corals and, you know, different species of fish that he's going to have. He's got like spectrum research in here for the lighting that he's going to use. I mean, it is, again, like that level of detail. There is no downside to going there. Let me set this back up. All right, camera's reset. Now you see, though, like how seriously some people take this. And he has the experience to know and appreciate how valuable that level of deep thought and planning is. So, I mean, we're talking about, I don't know, what, 25 pages or something of documentation that he has assembled, where every page is basically like a slide in a slideshow that's completely filled out with graphics and textual information and pricing and, you know, information on relationships between species and, you know, spectrums of lighting. And like, when you get to a certain, and again, I'm assuming most of my audience, even if they're just starting out, if you're listening this intently to some guy talk about reef keeping, you really care about it, right? And like, you know, you want to be in this long term and eventually, probably someday, if your life allows, have a pretty large tank. Going through even half of what Dusk has done to plan it out, it's entirely justified when you get up to a certain size. And it's not just about size, like I indicated earlier, with how important coral placement is with a nano tank. It's never just about the size of the tank. Sure, some of this stuff, like, you know, deep level space planning, becomes more relevant with bigger tanks, and costing exercises become more relevant with bigger tanks because there's just more cost involved. But all of it can be scaled to a nano tank, and some of it, like where the heck you're going to place corals, how big corals are going to grow, what kind of corals sting each other and which ones don't, all that kind of stuff is, I would argue, even more important for a nano tank, where you don't have like buffer zones and extra real estate to deal with. I mean, it is just critically important to know what you're doing before you do it, right? Critically important. And really, I mean, there's a lot of hobbies where that's true, but there are a few hobbies where like the quality of life of living creatures so deeply depends on you really knowing what the heck you're doing before you do it, right? And not just the quality of their life, sometimes their very survival. Yeah, I mean, like, I can remember like thinking to myself very early on in this hobby, when I had to house two pairs of clownfish together, like, oh, the whole territorial thing about clownfish has to be overblown. These are just tank clownfish. It's not going to be that bad. And putting tank clownfish in together and just watching them tear each other apart. That happened right after I moved here. I'd never had them together, but I was like, oh, this is a way bigger tank than they've ever had. And I got to house them in here until I can get a nano tank set up, because I wanted a little clownfish tank in the other room. But even something as basic as that, like understanding just how volatile two pairs of clownfish can be in a glass box together and what they can do to each other. I mean, they shredded each other. Like, and especially one pair that was bigger than the other pair just beat the heck out of the other pair. So, I don't know, like understanding everything from the creatures to the cost, to the placement of corals, to the, I mean, you get the picture. Like, my journey with this tank versus the journey Dusk will have with his systems when he gets these things set up is going to be a night and day different experience. And even though, you know, obviously the cost of what he's doing is way more significant than the cost of what I've done in front of you, like, because his is just, you know, there's just way more involved. It's way more real estate that he's working with. He will actually, like, have way less waste than I did stumbling my way through the dark with my first big system here. He will have way less waste going into this because he has mapped so much of it out and from the biological end all the way to the equipment end. So I can't emphasize it enough. Like, the planning of a reef tank often is, like, I would say that often, given the attrition rate in this hobby, the lack of planning is there's a direct correlation between it and a potential, like, long-term reef keeper washing out of the hobby, whether it's by their own choice or, like, their families, you know, forcing them to get out of it. Like, really, if you want to stay in it long-term, massive failure, massive repeated failure is rarely an option, whether it just you preclude yourself from that being an option because of the financial, you know, burden of it, or the people around you that have bearing on your life are like, we're not doing this anymore, dude, you can't do this anymore. Like, you have got to respect the critically important nature of planning some of this out and knowing what you're doing so that, like, you know, even in the times that you're stumbling along in the dark, you can kind of, like, reach out and feel the wall next to you in a proverbial sense and just kind of know, like, okay, like, I'm nervous and I'm in the dark, but, like, you know, I got a plan and there's going to be light around the next corner. Like, I just got to keep following this wall and bumping along and, like, I'll get there. That's really, I mean, a huge, huge part of long-term success in the hobby. And I'm utterly convinced of it. So anyway, as you guys can see, I mean, this is an hour and 30 minutes of me just talking. Like, typically I just talk for like 50 minutes of the podcast, right? And then I, like, field questions for another 30 or 40 minutes. This time around, like, I told you in episodes prior, like, this was going to be a lot. And, like, I had to really be prepared for it and in a good mental space to do it. I still don't know that I did it justice. You guys tell me. I'm sure that I left stuff out. I'm sure that, you know, there were parts of this that I didn't make enough sense. I know that me showing you a glimpse of, like, what Dusk has done was about the jankiest thing ever. I'm, like, holding my phone on this little stick trying to, you know, scan through some of this so you could see it. Like, you know, I'm sorry for the realities of my cheap setup and all that, but, like, all that aside, I hope that, like, something here you could connect with and, like, you know, potentially think through and bring to bear when you start your next system. And I feel like inevitably for almost everyone who follows me, you know, again, you're an hour and a half into this podcast, there's probably going to be another system in your future, right? Like, I think most of us at some point in years to come can bank on, if we're this interested in the hobby, there's going to be another system. And when that happens, I mean, I just feel like as you approach it and you can sense yourself approaching that critical juncture where you start pulling the trigger on things, do some of this legwork first. Just do it. Start now. Why not start now? Start, map out that, like, quote unquote reasonable dream tank, right? The dream tank within the realm of reason. Yeah. Like, not the Andrew Sandler tank, but the one that you could conceivably have someday, and kind of ease your way toward it and pick your way through it. And, you know, maybe torture yourself a little bit and throw some, you know, some of the today's current equipment into the mix and just see how much it would cost, or just, you know, have fun planning it out, because eventually, you know, and I mean, I think we can all reasonably assume, you know, by the time we get around to these new systems, unless they're upon us right now, like, equipment will even be better. Let it be a point of excitement. Like, I mean, everything will be better by the time we eventually do it. But thinking about it now, even just in excitement terms, like, not actually planning to pull the trigger on anything in the immediate future. Just thinking about what you may do down the line is a worthwhile exercise. It might not even feel like an exercise. It might just feel like fun daydreaming, but like it is worth considering for so many different reasons. So, all right, guys, I hope that you are all enjoying listening to the podcast as much as I am enjoying making the podcast. I really do genuinely enjoy this. This is like a super stressful week for me. I've got taxes I'm calculating all my taxes, which, foreign viewers, be happy that most of your governments just send you a tax bill, because that's just not how it works in this country, due to the fact that we have like massive tax corporations that lobby the government to make it so that Americans have to do their own taxes through them. But that's a horrible thing that all Americans will appreciate. It's like making sure your taxes are right. I've got like my annual teaching evaluation and observation coming up this week. That's stressing me out. I got a bajillion papers to grade. I needed to take my time between teaching classes today to do this for me. And like, it is literally relaxed me. So all you guys following along and like, you know, have an engaged conversation with me, and the people who are reaching out to me from like other countries and stuff, like it's crazy how many people from other countries. I got like this guy from Greece who's like, you know, Greece is behind you, dude, like every time I post an episode, which is awesome. I've got Australians listening. I've got Canadians listening. I mean, it's just, you know, Europeans from all over Europe. Notably no Germans yet. That's interesting to me, but a whole bunch of different European countries, Finland, like people in Finland are listening to me. So just let me say, that's wild and more than I ever imagined when I started creating content in the reef keeping hobby. And it's so rewarding, and like it's just such a fulfilling thing for me to do, and such a relaxing thing for me to do, and a like healthy thing for me to do. I have no plans of stopping anytime soon. If I have any say in it, I will squeeze in an episode of We the Reefers every week if I possibly can. And if I can't, you guys know that like I'm so busy, I'm drowning, is like, you know, proverbially speaking. Like if I don't get an episode out every week, I mean, I am like full court press from a 5-year-old with work bogging me down to a point that I can't even breathe. So I will do my utmost, guys, to continue getting these out at a week to week clip. And like I said at the beginning, please, like, you know, I want people to be part of this who really deserve to be part of like a deeper and more reasonable and like, I don't know, just a more mature conversation, I guess, about reef keeping. And we all know people who just, they really like, they're a certain kind of reefer who they wouldn't sit here for an hour and 30 minutes listening to this kind of talk. They would just, you know, kind of keep going their own route and kind of buying into certain things and, you know, stumbling their own way through it with their, you know, head half buried in the sand. And I'm not looking for like the masses. I don't want the masses of reef keepers to follow my efforts here. But all of you, if you're listening this long, I assume you really, really care about the hobby and about, you know, how society interacts with the hobby, and about your place in the hobby, and about what we can all add to it. And I know that we all know at least one other reef keeper like that who, you know, over the years we've gotten, you know, to know or gotten close to, or just that we respect and follow. So please, guys, with those kind of people, with people like us that are like-minded reef keepers, I urge you to share, you know, this podcast with them. I really would appreciate it. I want it to grow. I want it to be something. And I think you guys do too. So thanks so much for your support. Seriously. And keep on reefing on, guys. See you next time.